Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
Good afternoon. It's about a half a minute before noon. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM, live on the web, kmxt.org. Translator is now in the villages, K269AW Larson Bay, K269AX Carla, K269AY Akiak, K269AZ Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. Thank you, John, Steve, and Joe, for getting us back on the line out there in the villages. Hope your day is going well. It's 51 degrees currently out at the airport. We're at 56 here on Signal Hill. Humidity is at 74%, and east wind to 5 miles an hour blowing with visibility 10 miles. Partly sunny skies this afternoon with a high near 54. Calm winds become east 5 miles an hour. Isolated showers after 4 p.m. tonight with cloudy skies, a low around 47. Southeast winds 5 becoming calm in the evening. Chance of precipitation only 10%. Climbs up to 70% tomorrow. Rain is likely tomorrow, mainly between 10 and 4. Cloudy skies, a high near 53 with south winds 5 miles an hour. Chiniac Bay this afternoon, variable less than 10, 3-foot seas. Same tonight, same tomorrow. Marmot Bay this afternoon, variable less than 10, becoming east 10 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas. Tonight, east 10, becoming variable less than 10, 3-foot seas, variable less than 10, 3-foot seas, but rain tomorrow. News headlines from NPR coming right up.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump says no police department will be disbanded. While hosting a roundtable dialogue today with law enforcement officials, Trump said there are some bad apples, but 99% of police are great people. Civil rights activists and many law enforcement veterans say a deeply rooted culture of racial bias in police departments nationwide has cost too many unarmed black people their lives. That list includes George Floyd. Even as he was being publicly filmed, Officer Derek Chauvin kept his knee on Floyd's neck for more than 8 minutes until Floyd passed out and ultimately died. Former Vice President Joe Biden's campaign says the presumptive presidential nominee is in favor of police reform. But the Democrat vying to unseat Trump says he, too, is opposed to defunding the police. Here's NPR's Asma Khalid.
In a statement, a spokesman for Biden's campaign said, as his criminal justice proposal made clear months ago, Vice President Biden does not believe that police should be defunded. Biden's campaign pointed out that he supports the need for reform, including a $300 million investment in community policing. He's also calling for additional funding for body cameras and prioritizing the need to diversify police departments. Republicans, particularly Donald Trump's presidential campaign, have been trying to link Joe Biden to the calls among some on the left to defund the police. The slogan is unclear. It's become somewhat of a catch-all attached to those who want to dismantle the police, as well as those calling for redirecting some of the money that goes to police departments. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Derek Chauvin made his first court appearance today since he was arrested for killing George Floyd and charged with second-degree murder. He's been ordered to remain in custody on $1 million bond. During the 11-minute hearing, Chauvin was mostly silent. He appeared on closed-circuit television from the state's maximum security prison in Oak Park Heights. The World Health Organization is voicing support for the wave of protests against police violence and racial injustice that originated in this country. It's also raising the alarm about spreading coronavirus. Here's NPR's Ping Wang.
WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says people have good reason to protest.
WHO fully supports equality and the global movement against racism. We reject discrimination of all kinds.
The protests started in the U.S. after the world watched as George Floyd gasped and pleaded for his life, his neck under the knee of a Minneapolis police officer. And similar protests are now happening in Europe, Africa, and other regions. Tedros recommends that protesters follow the guidance of local health officials and take precautions to protect themselves from coronavirus, wearing a mask, keeping a distance, and for some, simply staying home. Ping Huang, NPR News.
The Dow is up 461 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Artinger's, 486-5554.
A crew member on the Tustamina tested positive for COVID-19 Saturday in Dutch Harbor, causing the Department of Transportation to cancel Tustamina voyages until June 12th. Jared Griffin with KMXT News has the story.
According to press releases published on social media Saturday by the City of Unalaska and Alaska's Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the Alaska Marine Highway System employee was experiencing symptoms associated with the virus, including a runny nose, coughing, and body aches. The employee isolated and was tested on board the Tustamina at around 5 o'clock p.m. The rapid test was confirmed as positive while the Tustamina was still docked at Dutch Harbor, the final stop before making a return trip back north along the Aleutian Chain and through Kodiak. The Tustamina will undergo the AMHS mitigation plan for COVID-19 cases as it makes its return trip back to its final destination. The mitigation plan includes quarantine for crew, social distancing for the 6 passengers currently on the ship, health screenings of everyone on board, and thorough disinfecting of the entire vessel. The Tustamina was recently in Kodiak on Wednesday as it was sailing southbound along the chain, making stops Thursday and Friday in Chignik, Sandpoint, King Cove, Cold Bay, False Pass, and Akatan. It is unknown if the crew member disembarked at any point along the voyage, except it has been confirmed that they stayed on board at Dutch Harbor. The Tustamina has a crew of 35 with no more than 60 passengers at one time. As of Saturday night, no passengers have been identified as having close contact with the infected crew member. However, 16 crew members did have close contact. Close contact is defined as being within 6 feet for 10 minutes or more. Passengers who boarded the Tustamina in Dutch Harbor did not come into contact with the crew member, but were disembarked Saturday evening. 6 passengers who originally boarded in Homer on June 2nd are still on the ship. Public health officials recommend that all passengers who were on board the Tustamina since its departure from Homer on June 2nd take extra precautions by wearing a mask when in public, minimizing their exposure to others, monitoring themselves for any symptoms, including fever twice a day, and getting tested for the virus that causes COVID-19 if they are symptomatic. Passengers should consider getting tested 7 to 14 days after they left the ship if they remain asymptomatic. If passengers believe they had close contact with a Tustamina crew member this week, they should immediately go into quarantine, monitor themselves for COVID-19 symptoms, and call DHSS Section of Epidemiology at 907-269-8000 or 1-800-478-0084. Symptoms may include a fever of 104 degrees or greater, cough, shortness of breath, or any two of the following: chills, loss of taste or smell, diarrhea, fatigue, headache, muscle joint aches, sweating, nausea, runny nose, sore throat, or increased sputum, that is saliva and mucus in the respiratory tract. Sailings of the Tustamina are canceled through Friday, June 12th. Sailings will resume on Saturday, June 13th, departing from Homer to Kodiak with a replacement crew. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
The Kennecott is currently scheduled to resume sailing June 25th with its first trip to Kodiak, departing Whittier July 1st, arriving in Kodiak July 2nd. All Tustamina passengers are being notified and rebooked or refunded as necessary. The new sailing schedule is available at ferry.alaska.com or by contacting the local terminal, 486-3941 or 1-800-642-0066. Airports in Alaska were preparing Friday for big changes to the state's requirements for travelers. Starting early Saturday morning, people flying into the state will be allowed to get tested for the coronavirus instead of quarantining for 2 weeks. Heidi Heiberg, the state's director of public health, explained the new process to reporters at the state Ted Stevens Airport on Friday. She said travelers will have to fill out a new form.
We've been working really closely with all of the airline companies, and we're asking them to hand that travel declaration form to the passengers on the flight if they didn't have time to go and print that down off of the website.
On the form, travelers will report whether they've been tested within 72 hours of their flight and have proof of negative results, or whether they want to get tested at the airport. They can also still opt to quarantine for 2 weeks. Hedberg said the best-case scenario is that people will get tested ahead of time.
We really want this to be easy. Get tested before, have your negative test result, complete the travel declaration, and flow through this airport.
At the Anchorage Airport, the state has hired Capstone Family Medicine to screen travelers. Dennis Spencer, chief executive of Capstone, said staff will help funnel people into lines.
Well, we've got a whole type of employee that we're going to hire that will be greeting these people when they come off the plane, welcoming them to Alaska, and making sure they can get to the right line to start the screening process. That's the intent.
Spencer said the process will include dozens of employees stationed throughout the airport. They will take forms and check test results. Also, they will provide testing for travelers who need it using nasal swabs at stations in the terminal. Spencer said the testing is free. The state said people must quarantine at their own expense until they get their test results back, which could take anywhere from a few hours to a few days. As the state lays out the outline of the new process ahead, there is still a lot of confusion. Local governments can have their own requirements. Also, some travelers from out of state said there's not enough testing available where they're from. Take Lisa Starr. She flew into Anchorage Friday on her way to Kodiak to visit her newborn grandson. She's from Kansas and said she hurried to get tested in time for her flight.
Finally, after looking for one for 3 days, I found the test in a little town in Kansas, and it took 2 days to get the results, and it put me within the 72-hour. But now that I'm here, I don't know what to do with it.
The airport was not yet set up to take her form on the proof of her negative test, so Star plans to go on to Kodiak test results in hand. To learn more about the state's revised health mandate, visit covid19.alaska.gov. Anchorage, like the state as a whole, has seen a surge of new coronavirus cases. Mayor Ethan Berkowitz said it's troubling, and he's calling on residents and visitors to renew their focus on social distancing and wearing masks in public.
We know that these measures work. There's a premium right now on people exercising personal responsibility, and I'm counting on the people of Anchorage to show that kind of personal responsibility. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, do it for the community, because it makes a difference.
State's largest city saw nearly 50 new cases in the past week. One cluster is centered in the Providence Transitional Care Center, which reported 29 cases among residents and staff. City Health Department Director Natasha Pineda said another cluster of 12 cases associated with a single Anchorage household. In addition, 4 people without symptoms tested positive when they sought hospital care for an unrelated reason. Pineda said 3 positives came from employment screenings.
All of these indicate to us at the health department that we do have presence of community spread. We know some of the cases that we have in Anchorage were related to some gatherings in other communities during the Memorial Day weekend.
Berkowitz said visitors need to exercise the same precautions in Anchorage as they would in their home communities. The mayor says he heard disturbing reports, particularly about flight crews.
It has come to my attention that some of the restaurants, particularly in downtown, have had uncomfortable experiences with cargo crews engaging in, let's just say, too much revelry with too many people and not doing it in a way that was respectful of the wait staff.
Anchorage has seen a recent average of about 6 cases a day, which is close to what the average was during the first peak in April. In Juneau, University of Alaska Southeast students, faculty, and alumni spent much of the past week debating a proposal to merge the university with one of the other UA campuses to cut costs. On Thursday, the UA Board of Regents voted to delay moving forward with the merger and instead decided to look into how much it would cost. From Juneau, this report.
In Southeast Alaska, there's a lot of opposition to merging UAS with another university. The city and borough of Juneau voted to publicly oppose it. City manager Rory Watt says a merger would mean the loss of local leadership and it would make the university less appealing for students. Assemblymember Elisa Hughes-Scandes agreed.
I wouldn't be in Juneau without the university. The attractiveness to it as prospective students, I can think of police, firefighters, business owners in our community that were all in my graduating class, and so it's a real magnet to bring folks to Juneau.
After making public testimony on the merger, city leaders in Ketchikan and university employees in Sitka, where UAS has satellite campuses, also objected. This isn't the first time the idea to merge UAS with another campus has come up. Sage Logan is an accounting student at UAS in Juneau. He's watched past efforts to bring up the merger. He says this time around, it seems like the Board of Regents is willfully avoiding getting meaningful public comments from students and faculty.
Just the way that they're setting this up and continuing to propose it, like even through this pandemic, like it feels like they're taking advantage of the fact that we're all separated.
There's also clear opposition among some faculty at the university.
I find it pretty outrageous.
Laura Vess is a sociology professor at UAS.
The loss of UAS would be such a loss to the state of Alaska and to the students of this region and to communities and to tribes, to just have some of the regents seemingly tired of process want to push it through without actual consideration of what the role this university plays.
In a UAS faculty meeting on Friday, most opposed the merger, according to a professor who attended. As for cutting costs, Vess has one idea.
What about those upper-level administrative positions? Some of them have taken furloughs, which is a good, important step, but perhaps it's time to do a little bit of salary decreases as well.
Meanwhile, other stakeholders are proposing alternatives to the merger. Alaska Native leaders proposed two alternatives, one being that UAS becomes the centralized hub for rural campuses.
I would suggest that the UA system let the rural campuses lead and own distance education because our rural campuses need the distance education. They deserve it. They use it.
That's Joe Nelson. He's chairman of the board for C-Alaska. He has also worked in student services at the university. He and other Alaska Native leaders also suggested that the university could be designated a tribal college.
From a Native perspective, I'm just trying to picture around the Board of Regents table there and then the core, you know, decision makers. I don't see a lot of folks that are closely tied to our 10,000 years of history that we've had in Southeast Alaska here.
But as the public continues to explore alternative options to merging the campus, the University of Alaska system is facing significant financial problems. There have been deep cuts to state funding, enrollment is down, and the coronavirus pandemic has added to that burden. In Juneau, I'm Pablo Peña.
Thank you, Pablo. Here's a new little module called Possibly, this one analyzing food waste and the quarantine.
Welcome to Possibly, where we take on huge problems like the future of our planet and use science to find everyday solutions. I'm Megan Hall. Today, we're answering a question that's been on a lot of people's minds during the COVID-19 quarantine. While we're limiting trips to the store, how can we maximize our groceries and minimize our food waste? We had Maya Glicksman and Marie LaChance from our Possibly team look into this question. Welcome, Maya and Marie.
Hi.
Hey, Megan.
So, Maya, let's start with some background. Why should we worry about food waste?
Well, Marie and I aren't experts on this topic, so we talked to someone who could help us.
My name's Jessica Berry. I'm the director of the Office of Sustainability at Brown University.
Before Brown sent all of its students home, Jessica spent a lot of time thinking about how to prevent food waste on campus.
Basically, she said that every stage of the food production process causes greenhouse gas emissions.
From preparing farmland, to packaging produce with paper or plastics, to transporting it all across the country, really a lot of energy goes into the foods we buy.
And then somebody buys it, and then they go home and they throw it away.
So how often does the food we intend to eat end up in the trash?
Well, the United Nations estimates that almost a third of all the food that's made for humans is either lost or it's wasted.
So now that we're trying to stay home and limit our trips to the grocery store, how do we make sure that the food in our homes lasts as long as possible and doesn't go to waste?
Well, first, Jessica gave us some advice on the types of vegetables that we should be buying.
Winter squashes, onions, root vegetables, potatoes, yams, things like that. They last a really long time.
So those kinds of veggies are great to keep in the house for longer periods between grocery runs.
Jessica also shared her trick for making sure food gets in before it's too late.
Every day I go to the refrigerator and I look at what I have and I say, okay, what looks like it's going to go bad? It really takes practice to figure out when's the last kind of responsible moment you can eat a food.
It doesn't always work out perfectly, but there are plenty of ways to get creative in the kitchen. You can save veggie scraps like the ends of carrots and onions to make stock, or turn stale bread into breadcrumbs. And of course, there's always freezing foods for later.
Really, the freezer is your friend. A lot of fruits can be frozen. Soups are really great.
Did Jessica have any other food tips for this pandemic?
Actually, yeah. Jessica said that farmers are being hit particularly hard right now. So the best thing that we can do is just support them.
If you can do one thing, is to invest in a CSA and or farmers markets.
CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. It's sort of like a subscription box for produce. You pay a farmer in advance for a regular delivery of things like fresh vegetables or other local foods.
CSAs don't necessarily prevent food waste, but they do help farmers out financially. Also, there's very little packaging involved, and because the food is local, it can be delivered without emitting too many greenhouse gases.
Great! Thanks, Maya and Marie. And thanks to Fatima Hussein, who also helped with today's episode. That's it for today. For more information or to ask a question about the way you recycle, use energy, or make any other choice that affects the planet, go to thepublicsradio.org/possibly or subscribe to Possibly wherever you get your podcasts. Possibly is a co-production of the Institute at Brown for Environment and Society and the Publix Radio.
What'd you think? Kind of quirky, but some good ideas in there. When's the safest time to go into their icebox and eat it before it goes bad? It's pretty funny. Fish Radio for today.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Kodiak dried kelp makes a splash at stores across the nation. More after this.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at AMSI.org.
Dried kelp from Kodiak is the first Alaska seaweed to make a splash at hundreds of retail stores across the U.S. The strips of ribbon and sugar kelp can be rehydrated and tossed into salads, rice, or broths. It's the debut product for Kodiak kelp growers in their partnership with Blue Evolution, the California-based company that has pioneered the kelp industry in Alaska. The new product's snazzy biodegradable packaging promotes the nutritional power and purity of Alaska kelp and support for local family-owned farms. Founder and CEO Bo Perry says of all Alaska regions, Kodiak fits the bill.
Geography, currents, growing space, local stakeholder attitudes. We wanted the ability to be accessible to processing for fresh delivery of raw material. And Kodiak ended up ranking the best.
Kodiak growers will expand from 40 acres to 100 acres this year with more in the works. The bulk of the pack is going into a completely new product.
Well over 90% of our product is going into a blanched frozen product that you may not see on the shelves, but that we're starting to move to high-end restaurants, food service, and manufacturing down in the lower 48.
Perry says Alaska's fledgling kelp industry faces a lot of organizational challenges in the short term, but he believes the possibilities are endless.
I think the Alaska brand and its sort of physical reality, also its infrastructure and people, you know, really lend themselves to a good outcome here. And really an extraordinary one. I think Alaska can be one of the great seaweed producing regions on the planet.
Find store locations or order the Alaskan dried kelp online at blueevolution.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Thank you. 51 degrees, 74% humidity, an east wind of 5 miles an hour blowing at the airport with 10 miles of visibility. Sunny this afternoon with a high near 54. Calm winds become east 5 miles an hour. Isolated showers after 4 a.m. tonight with cloudy skies, low around 47. Southeast winds 5, becoming calm in the evening with chance of precipitation at 10%. Rain likely tomorrow, mainly between 10 and 4. Cloudy skies, a high near 53. South winds 5 miles an hour, 70% chance of rain. We got a call the other day in regard to this key ring thing, but not a confirmation that it actually got picked up. So if you lost a set of keys with multiple key rings on it, that includes some remotes, call 512-5405. And if you already claimed it, could you give us a call down here so we can stop reading this? I know Saturday somebody called and got the phone number from us, so not sure if they matched the keys with the person or not. Let's see. Update from the Weir Counts Upper Station, 1 Sockeye, 227 for the year. Litnick 269 came through the Weir yesterday for a total of 1710. 16 more Sockeye went up the Buskin yesterday for a total of 303 for the year. Things are looking pretty good. If you're on the other side somewhere, Chignik 478 yesterday, Karlik 32 Sockeye, 8 Kings, the Iakulik 3,342 Sockeye went up the Weir yesterday for a grand total of 6,500, a little over that, and 38 Chinook. Not much at Dog Salmon Crete yet. Fraser Lake 0, Upper Station only 1 for a total of 227. So sporadically, places are doing okay. It's the 8th of June, 5:12. The sun came up, goes down 11:06, 17 hours and 56 minutes of daylight time. A 1 minute, 48 second daylight gains. Record high was 73 in 2013, 35 in 1972, and 1939 were the lows.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued 10 a.m. on June 6th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 11th, in the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, June 9th, and remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, Duck Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine deer in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations. In Fowl Bay, to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay, to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay, to the fish and game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour quarterphone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Good to hear, huh? High tides at 5:24 this afternoon, 7.13 feet, and the evening low tides at 10:30, 2.5 feet. The west side, the Uganic tides at 5:37 this afternoon, 14.4 feet, and the evening low tides at 11:19, 2.4 feet. Synopsis, high pressure remains over the Gulf through Tuesday afternoon. A 993 millibar low pressure system then moves across the southern Gulf Tuesday evening into Wednesday. Chiniac Bay today, variable less than 10 3-foot seas, same tonight, same tomorrow, with rain mixed tomorrow. Marmot Bay, variable less than 10, becoming east 10 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas today. East 10 becoming variable less than 10, 3-foot seas tonight. Variable less than 10, 3-foot seas and the rain tomorrow. In Shelikov Strait, southwest 10, 3-foot seas today. Tonight, southwest 15, 3-foot seas. Same tomorrow with rain also. Kodiak Island's Borough Solid Waste Advisory Board, SWAB, meets tonight at 5:15 in the Borough Assembly Chambers. The public is welcome to attend. Meeting is also available remotely via Zoom. Learn about what happens to all the trash that gets thrown away. Questions 486-9343. There is a borough meeting tonight. The borough and the assembly continuing a regular meeting of June 4th at 6:30 tonight, considering reconsideration of a vote taken on Resolution 2021-01 in regards to funding for the school district. Call 486-3231 during public comments. The meeting is open. You can also send comments in advance to clerks@kodiak.ak.us. If you need further information, 486-9310. Again, that's going to preempt our programming tonight so that we can get the coronavirus special in, too. We're going to run All Things Considered from 4 o'clock until 6 o'clock. Well, we're going to run All Things Considered from 4 to 5 and then run the coronavirus special at 5 o'clock tonight, then go into an Island Messenger before the borough meeting. City Council's having a work session tomorrow night at 7:30. We'll be broadcasting that live. And check out our calendar for more information about other events happening.